This is K-12 Tech Talk.
K-12 Tech Talk.
The podcast by K-12 Techs for K-12 Techs. Real conversations, real arguments, and real banter on trending K-12 technology topics and issues.
Live from the NTP studios, this is the K-12 Tech Talk podcast. This is episode 161. We're all in moods tonight because we feel we're going to be together soon and we can feel that vibe with you.
What mood are you in?
I'm in the mood where I'm telling Chris everything he's doing wrong. So
yeah, that's happened already.
Yeah. So be ready tonight. I am Josh.
I don't know how this is going to go.
I've not introduced either of you, so you shouldn't be talking. I am Josh.
I introduced myself. I'm here. I'm Mark. I'm in a mood.
Hi, I'm Chris.
Yep.
Everything's great.
It's going to be one of those episodes. Chris, you and I were on spring break last week, right?
Yes.
How'd that go? Did you have off? Did you work?
I worked at home. I ran networking cable by my...
You got to talk into the microphone, Chris. Quit looking away.
Oh, geez. I ran networking cable in my house to this computer that is upstairs so that you can get off my back about my connection dropping in and out.
Very nice.
But now I'm using a computer that I don't really use. My headphones are crackling, and you've been giving me a hard time before you hit the record button. It's been a real treat.
So you took a week off of Infinite Campus implementation?
Yeah, but I will tell you, for the last 2 days, I've had 4 meetings of 2 hours apiece. So that's a whole work day.
Right.
And then I had a working lunch today with 2 of our main Infinite Campus people that are implementing things with me. And I was telling my wife, I used to love working lunches because that was really just an excuse to have a good lunch and you didn't really do a whole lot. But no, this was like we worked the whole time.
Oh, geez.
So I'm pretty worn out.
That sucks. If you're keeping score at home, my Infinite Campus person sent me an email this week telling me that they finally got our historical behavior records imported in. That should have been imported before our live date in August. So, if you're keeping score at home, that's only a couple months late. So, you have that to look forward to, Chris. Mark, have you had spring break, Mark?
No. Remember, New England has got a weird vacation thing. We have a February break and we have an April break.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
When are you coming up on April break? Are you doing anything fun or do you have to work?
I don't know, like 3 weeks from now or something. I don't remember.
You going to Hawaii?
Yeah, I should do that. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's nice. Treat your wife to a nice trip. That's nice of you, Mark.
Yeah. Hawaii sounds great.
So while I was on spring break, thankfully I had my laptop with me, I get an email from my AT&T sales rep and said, oh, by the way, your contract is expiring and you are out of contracts or your pricing is going to go up for POTS lines. Yes, we still have POTS lines for our elevators and fire alarms and fax machines in one of our buildings from AT&T. And we get this lovely letter. I think our contract was like $60 a month. They're telling us it was going to go up to $280 a month unless we signed a multi-year contract. That brought it back down to like $45 a month. But at the end of this new contract, the new rate was $1,400 a month and will not be adjusted. So 2 years from now, when we come out of contract, the monthly rate would be $1,400 per POTS line per month. So
sounds right.
Clearly AT&T wants to get out of the POTS game. If you haven't had this discussion if you're still on AT&T, Mark, I think you said Verizon's doing the same thing. Are you guys get similar notice from Verizon?
Yeah, Verizon is... we're in our area, it's more Verizon, and they've also said, hey, POTS lines are going away. And so we're in the middle of the transition too. So yeah. I mean, all the companies are getting rid of POTS lines and you should too.
Yeah. Well, we are. We're going to. Over the next 2 years, we're going to migrate away. We already have an eFax solution for a couple other buildings. So we'll probably just leverage that for faxing. But then the whole discussion of getting on, I think they're called fire dialers for fire alarms, the cell connections for fire alarms. And then I guess until recently, and I use the term recently kind of loosely there, but for elevator connections, because, you know, elevators are a pretty wild beast. I don't know if you've had to deal with elevator inspections.
Yeah, it is crazy to me. Like, you get in the little box, you think it's going to stay on the same place, but you press a button and it goes up and down and you end up on a different floor.
Yeah, I noticed that too, Chris. And then, like, you push a different button and then you go to another floor. It's weird. Like, in the same door, you're at a different place. That, Josh, that's what you're talking about, right?
That's what we've experienced recently, Josh.
Yeah.
Gentlemen. I said inspections.
Tell me more about your elevator lines, Josh.
We're
all going to be together for the first time in
A year.
Almost a year, yeah. So it's going to be spicy tonight, I think.
Yeah, it's going to be spicy Monday, I think. If you have never had had to deal with elevator inspections.
If you've never ridden an elevator before.
Well, they're like this hallowed ground of, you know, you can't do anything without a service technician that's certified to work on an elevator. So this whole discussion of cell dialers for elevators was drama until recently. And I guess that finally got certified or finally got the stamp of approval from the elevator gods. I don't know who makes that decision. We're going to try moving to cell dialers for elevators soon.
Chris, is he still talking about elevators right now? Jesus.
He is, but it is relevant because we had a question on K-12 Tech Pro. This question is brought to you by Managed Methods, who can help you with all kinds of stuff with your Google admin or your Microsoft implementations and doing auditing and helping you out with what kids are looking at, school safety, all that kind of stuff. Check out Managed Methods. But that was a question about fax machines. Are you still using POTS? Have you moved over away from POTS? Fax machines grouped in with elevator lines, grouped in with fire alarms. Josh and I, we had some discussion, and I just pulled up an email while we were bantering with you about the invention of the elevator. Side note, I recently talked to a group of kids about their future career choices, and I recommended that they should become elevator technicians.
Yes, 100%.
Because the guy that comes to my school district, I know that he makes more than our highest paid position in the school district. Yes. And I just think that's awesome because he inspects elevators.
And it's an hourly rate, and he gets paid overtime and has a state contract. Like, yep. Yeah.
Wow.
So I started the move over with AT&T's going to their IP Flex, basically getting into their SIP stuff, dropping my POTS lines. Last summer, last May, and it's been a fiasco, Josh, just to get you excited for that. So
great.
Yesterday, we had a call from AT&T's collections agency trying to get money on a bill of a line that I disconnected in May.
Oh, my gosh.
And it made it to the admin building. So then I sent off like a really nice email. Here's the opener. This is the phone line that's been a fiasco. That's a quote from me to AT&T. And then I went on to say some other things as well. But they've just now technically officially turned it off. And, you know, this part is supposed to be telling this part what's going on. And there's bad communication. And it's been a real treat.
Yeah. We still use POTS fax lines in a number of places, but we also have a eFax solution, HelloFax. They're not a sponsor. They were bought by Dropbox. So now some of the features that were part of HelloFax or that were part of Dropbox are now in HelloFax, vice versa. There's an e-signature document thing now in there too. So if you're looking, and it's cheap, like it's super, I have like four or five fax numbers in this system, and it's cheaper than what I was paying for one POTS line with AT&T. So if you're looking to kind of dip your toe into an eFax solution, I would check out HelloFax if you're wanting to do that.
And our phone system is Zoltis, and we went with their eFax solution to move our faxes away.
Oh, did you? Okay. Interesting. I got a quote for Zoltis for replacing our Avaya phone system. Not that we're going to, just kind of fact-finding mission. Any other listener emails, Chris?
Well, going back, I mean, sticking with this subject, this IP Flex stuff with AT&T, we did get moved over. Like, our elevators are on this, like, cell backup thing with AT&T.
Yeah.
Then it when it works, it works. Like, when we got moved over, okay. I think we're old in thinking that POTS is, I still like a POTS line, like, do that stuff.
Yep, love it. Never goes down until a squirrel eats the line and it gets kind of staticky, which we have happened more times than you would think. Like, you would lose that bet.
Mark, you guys have squirrels up Massachusetts way?
Yes, we call them bears, though. But same thing, right?
It is the same thing.
Okay, cool. Yeah. We do we got squirrels. Yeah.
You probably have big squirrels. Michigan, the state of Michigan has really, really big squirrels. They have, like, their typical gray squirrel that we have here in Missouri, but they also have black squirrels that get massive, like the size of a small dog, practically. They're huge squirrels.
Do you think he's telling the truth?
I'm 100% telling the truth. Michigan listeners, we have a bunch of you. Email Chris. Email the podcast, k12techtalk@gmail.com.
This is that point in the episode when we see, like, why do people stop listening? Like, that, like, line just drops.
It's
Michigan squirrels is the exact moment in the episode.
Like, what was it?
It's
okay. Trivia. Anyway, another listener email from Howard, and they can help you out with all of your K-12 needs. Hit up Seth Shockley over at Howard. It's sshockley@howard.com.
Is Howard the emailer or Howard the sponsor?
Howard is the sponsor, clarify that. Well, okay. This is coming from listener Michael. Here's the question. I'd like to have your guys' help in putting together use cases, maybe some one-size-fits-all approach to how districts might use password managers. Do you guys support password managers, and why should we do password managers for all of our faculty and staff? And do you want to use a free product, a paid-for product? Would you guys be against it?
So I know Michael, and I know what he's attempting to do here. I think he's started some early conversations with the state consortium about getting special pricing from companies like Bitwarden and LastPass and what's the other one? What's the other big one? But anyway, trying to get schools 1Password to buy into using a paid for product instead of the built-in product that's in Chrome. We don't block the password manager in Chrome. We don't outwardly say that you should use it. We do support, if someone wants to use a password manager, especially a paid one, we'll help them get that started and use that. We recently started using one in our office as well, that we can share secure documents back and forth between the IT staff. So they definitely have their place. I think, though, you know, I know Mark's a big fan of SSO. Specifically, you know, when I think of SSO, I'm thinking with Google. I think that cuts down on some of that need for a paid password manager solution. The more products that you can SSO with, the better off you are from that perspective. But I do think they have a place in the environment. It's just whether or not you have the manpower and time to support them.
I have mixed feelings about this. My first thought is, everything you're doing at an enterprise level should be SSO. That you should have you should be really focusing your time and effort on a single sign-on approach, whether it's Google or Office 365, or if you're using another enterprise SSO. I do think there's a kind of a place for password managers. I don't necessarily know if it's an enterprise-wide approach that you should be taking. I do think, though, that password managers are misunderstood And so when people ask me if I use a password manager, I will say, yes, I do. And the first question is always, well, isn't that more dangerous to put all your passwords in one place? And my immediate response is, it allows me to have better password management strategies, which is every website is a different, unique, complex password.
Yeah.
I don't know the passwords. I don't have to write them down. So it allows me to say, if one website is breached, I know that the other ones are not, or it's not, you know, going to do that. But yes, I think people have very mixed opinions on password managers. I don't necessarily, personally, I don't think that it's an enterprise tool, but I do think that there could be value in enterprise or password managers at specific teams, specifically IT department. I just don't know if I would do that at the teacher or principal level.
Yeah. And Michael and I kind of talked through that too, what trying to find a use case of, okay, if I'm going to buy this for 300 faculty, say it's going to be our enterprise solution, what's the use case of the ability to share passwords back and forth between, like, are you going to set a district password for something? Now, you there might be a, I'm thinking of a streaming service that we subscribe to that might have a single password for the district. Like, there could be some certain things that have one global password that you want to get out to everybody at once. But boy, that's going to be few and far between. I think, like you said, though, Mark, from a team perspective, like the IT department, if you're sharing documentation notes and you want to keep them secure and share them that way, I think that's a great solution. But from an enterprise as a whole, for the whole district, I think that use case is few and far between. Chris?
It is an interesting spot to even like want to pick. I don't tell my staff, like, this is the recommended one even. I think this is actually probably something I should do some during the day sit down on, because it would kind of make sense. Like, hey, we're all in on Google password manager stuff, or I'm if someone's talking to me, I'm always going to recommend LastPass. Or should I start doing some budget where, like, hey, I have staff wanting to invest into this, so I can support them. You know, because if you're saying it out of your mouth that you support it, then you should support it.
Right.
And make sure that they have training on how to use it properly in the whole bit. I've really just been like, yeah, they're a good idea.
One thing that it kind of forced me to do, so I subscribe to a password manager personally, and then just recently did it at work. And on my personal account, I was using it at work. So I had a lot of all of that information was commingled together. So by subscribing at work with a different company than I use for my personal password manager, it's made me remove all of those district account passwords out of my personal password manager account, which is a good thing. Like, that there needs to be that delineation between personal and professional there. So that was definitely a good thing. It forced me to move that stuff out, which is good.
Passwords are good.
Passwords are good.
And now, all right, you ready for another one?
No, passwords aren't good.
Oh.
Pass keys.
Yeah, sorry. But I am not putting my fingerprint into my phone.
Here we go.
All right, another, this is a K-12 Tech Pro post. This is brought to you by ClassLink. ClassLink, I used to say like clever, but better, but we just did that clever inter. I shouldn't have put them in the same sentence. Check out ClassLink for your rostering for all of your student data sync needs. Quick shout out on K-12 Tech Pro to Weston and Dylan. Weston's always posting these things on Fridays that
my guys use your brain. Love those.
Pretty fun.
Yeah.
I think I'm like dumb. I never get them like ever.
I don't have time.
And I love seeing people solve them. So anyways, Weston posts these cool things. If you're not on Pro, you need to just join and know what I'm talking about. They're cybersecurity related-ish. And we gave away one of those cool flippers. Weston won that, but then he gave it to the person that got his puzzle right, which was Dylan. So just quick shout out to those guys. But here's
guys
the question
were
from Pro.
So mad about that they didn't win that.
Limited. I mean, I think the U.S. is going to shut down the import of those. So you can get them on Pro because we give them away. Schoology versus Google Classroom. This is kind of into ed tech land a little bit, but does your school pick one or the other as far as an LMS goes? Do you enjoy support when the world is blended? Can you use both in your environment? If you have experience with one or the other, which one would you use? What say you guys?
Mark, this is an ed tech question. We'll let you go first.
It's not necessarily an ed tech question. This is, you know, you're talking about Schoology to Google Classroom. I think when it comes to LMSs, there are two purposes, and Schoology and Google Classroom bridge both of those. The first is instructional delivery. The second is academic operations, meaning attendance and gradebook and rosters and things like that. I think you need to be very clear on what your intention is for Schoology or Google Classroom. Are you trying to deliver content and instruction and curriculum and standards, curriculum maps? Or are you just needing a place where the classroom can be organized in a digital world and teachers can enter grades and take attendance? That's where I think the two differentiated.
If someone came to you, let's say your district was standardized on Google Classroom as your quote unquote LMS. I know some people will take issue with that statement and say that Google Classroom is not an LMS, but for the sake of this argument,
yeah,
let's say that. Let's say you have standardized on Google Classroom and a teacher or a building, Mark, since you have like 75 buildings, come to you and say, we want to use Schoology as our LMS. How do you handle that?
My very first question on a question like this is always going to be, what for? What do you want to do? And what are your goals? And what are your intentions? And if somebody repeats the exact same purpose or functionality of Google Classroom, I'd say you've just described what system A can do. Why are you entertaining system B? So I think Google Classroom and Schoology have a lot of similarities and overlap, and there are some differences. And if your use case really emphasizes those differences, then sure, go ahead and take a look at the other system. But I will say this, at least in my own experience, you know, 90% of what principals and teachers will describe their LMS as doing might be able to be handled in both. So if you're going to be moving from Schoology to Google Classroom or vice versa, you just need to have your use case down. Otherwise, you're going to be paying for a platform that you don't necessarily need, or you're going to be migrating and moving everybody and retraining everybody to do the exact same thing in a different place.
Because Schoology is not free, right?
No, I don't think so.
I don't think so either. And I mean, so you could also make that argument that really Google Classroom, to get the majority of the features, isn't free anymore either, like GradeSync and MasterSync now.
Yep.
But we're not going to go down that road.
But just to go down that road barely, this whole time until you said that, I kept thinking, well, I'm always going to pick Google Classroom because it's free. But you're 1,000% right. Like if you pump the brakes and really start doing some math, your Schoology, or what's the other one that's popular, like Canvas. Yeah. Some of those other things, they can start to make some sense.
Well, and I think it's
just really in terms of money.
It's going to be really interesting because I think sometime this summer, isn't it, where Google has said that roster sync and I think grade syncing will not work unless you pay up for the Workspace for Education Plus account. So, you know, you're kind of stuck. You're going to be paying it one way or another. And yeah, I don't know.
I think when you talk to folks around, like, do you want a full-fledged LMS where you can push out curriculum maps and push out lesson plans and have standardization across your district? Most academic folks will say, absolutely, I want to do that. Then great, let's go get Schoology or Canvas or anything like that. But
even your infinite campus has the whatever.
There's a capability. But if you really, really pull back that layer or peel the layer of the onion of like what it takes to maintain that and do that and enforce that. And also, I will say this, are you in a school district where that kind of culture is the norm, is accepted? That's something you really have to ask yourself. all these kinds of things I just described sound ideal and is great, but not every district is in a place where they can do that. And not every district is a place where standardization is accepted and warranted or revered by teachers.
Great example. Years ago, we had a very a teacher that was gung-ho on using Canvas. The principal bought Canvas licenses for their whole building. This is what we're going to use, blah, 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 blah. They had two teachers use it. Everyone else stayed in Google Classroom. So from that perspective, the teachers were already bought into Google Classroom. They had assignments in Classroom. So what was going to be the big push or the big reason why they would jump ship to Canvas? It never really took hold to make them move over. So we ended up dumping it after, I think, a year or two. You have that problem of switching too. That would be a nightmare. Almost like switching sysses, right, Chris?
Mm-hmm. It's a lot of fun.
You have any more listener emails? I got one.
I do. This one comes from listener Robert. And I will say this. This is brought to you by a proud sponsor of the K-12 Tech Talk podcast, Extreme Networks. Listener Robert is wondering, what's the best way as a tech director, not in the trenches all the time of all things technical, but wanting to still know the technical things, what's the best way, what say you guys, on learning about networking and learning about switching and learning about all the technical aspects of running a tech department? If you're kind of in that role where you're not in the trenches, you're not doing the tech stuff, but you want to make sure that you're staying relevant, what would you say to that person?
I think you got to get in the trenches.
I think so too. Mark, what would be your method of getting in the trenches though?
When something breaks, you get involved. You are the one either fixing it or talking with the people who are fixing it. I think you can spend all the time you want in the world watching videos and YouTube videos and taking courses and doing professional development. But you really learn the most about this stuff when it goes wrong and you're the one who's got to get yourself out of that mix. So I think you got to get in the trenches if you really want to learn the technical side of this business.
So this is a little difficult for me because I came up in the technical world. Config and switches, we ripped out and replaced physical network, wireless network at the hospital I was at. That's what I cut my teeth on. So I think Mark's exactly right. If I had not been exposed to that, if I was more of a manager role that had made it into a director rather than a technical role that made it into director, exactly what you said, when something goes wrong, you take your director hat off. You are now level one technician. Okay, what do you want me to do? What do you need? You need someone to go out and run out and go troubleshoot, see what IP address is on a PC or a printer. What can I ping something? Like, you become that level one troubleshooter then. You're taking direction from probably your network admin. I agree completely, Mark. That's going to be the best way to learn. Chris?
I know that I've talked about this as it was happening, but over summer, my network administrator retired, and our department got restructured and our technician became our system administrator. And I took on the network administration role that I hadn't been in. This is my 10th year at this school district. I hadn't really messed with networking for 10 years. And you go back 10 years in the district that I was at prior to this one, a flat network was still very popular. Like, a lot had changed. Even like server stuff, talk about that world. Virtualization was still decently new. But going back to networking, VLANs were this new thing coming up. So those months prior to Mike retiring, we always had good conversation about how things were getting set up, but I wasn't in the trenches actually doing the setup. So I was, sitting across from him. I could talk about VLANs and I could talk about how our network is set up, but I didn't do the setup.
Right.
So I had a big learning curve getting back into it. I think my probably one piece of advice that I felt like I did right was I leaned into either another person that is a network administrator or is doing that role that you're wanting to learn more about. or a company that you feel comfortable working with. Like it is, I felt okay if I need to reach out to a consulting company that our district already had a relationship with and they can hold my hand through whatever this is. I'm going to watch them and I'm going to experience with them. Yes, they want me to drive the stupid cursor and type in the commands. I will. I'm going to make myself do it, but I'm going to have someone with me, of course, for the big picture of the district not falling apart, that they're going to help me get through these problems so that I'm not wasting the district's time or my department's time. Again, getting your hands dirty, but you can get your hands dirty with some help with you as well.
Mark, it would you say that you think getting that exposure is easier in a very large district like yours, where like Chris's scenario that he just talked about, leveraging an outside vendor to help you kind of do that handholding and getting that exposure, is it easier because in theory, a larger district would have a larger network team? Is it easier to have that conversation and kind of that hand, quote unquote, handholding take place with an internal team member versus reaching out for vendor support to do that? Or am I thinking of that wrong?
Good question. I think there are a lot of times where I'm very jealous of the technical knowledge of small district folks. You guys are a whole lot more hands-on than I am. You are both at the 30,000 foot level and the ground level at the same time. And so I do think that my immediate answer is small districts. Your hands-on approach and more technical knowledge is going to far exceed somebody at the larger district. That being said, at the larger district, you are more likely to engage with a team of people who have very, very deep expertise in networking and network architecture and those kinds of things. So it's fascinating. I think that the two of you, your technical knowledge far exceeds me. Easily. I think you guys,
but Mark,
mostly because of me.
Counterpoint.
Yeah, that's a whole
other
thing.
Counterpoint to that. I would say your policy and management knowledge far exceeds Chris and I's day-to-day policy and management knowledge. Like I've got a team of two other guys that I have to worry about managing and policy, you know, taking care of those policies. You have a team that's much larger than that. Your focus is policy and management. So yeah, depending, I don't know.
It's hard,
I don't know
right?
The pro and con is there.
Yeah, no, I don't think there is a pro or a con. I think I have, let me put it this way. I have a person who's fully dedicated that their entire job is managing our Google Admin console. So when we talk about like trainings on Google Admin, I'm like, you need to do this training. You are phenomenal at this. You know every aspect of Google because you live in this all day, every day. I have somebody whose entire job is managing the filter. The technical expertise that those people have is phenomenal, but their knowledge is very limited to their scope of work. Whereas at the small districts, you guys, and I'm very, very jealous of this, you know how this device works on this wireless, works on this authentication, works with this platform, works with this browser. That like end-to-end knowledge that small districts have is really, really hard at the large district level.
Sure, I could see that.
So,
The more we talk about this, could be a very interesting roundtable keynote type discussion. You know, contrast comparison of large district, small district, pros, cons, like this could be a very, very interesting conversation.
Yeah, it's quickly fun conversation because it ends with we're all done with the same crap. Like, Mark's one of your maintenance guys put the huddle camera upside down. So did mine. Like, it's the same stuff. It just scales different. It is great.
Yeah.
So, and to that point, Mark, today we spent our day, my whole department, three people, pulling Chromebooks out and doing Chrome OS updates on them. Like I did probably 15 machines. My two guys did probably 15 machines each in a span of a couple hours. So, you know, I can be in my morning dealing with E-rate crap and then in my afternoon doing Chrome OS updates and stuff.
Yeah. Now the opposite though, like yesterday I was working on with my network team we have multiple locations for our office, which in and of itself is a pain.
Sure.
I'm on one location in the morning talking about wireless. Then the afternoon, I come over, I'm like, hey, I had a conversation with the network team about wireless and we're thinking about changing something. How does that work on our Chromebooks? What are you thinking? That is so hard to get multiple brains, multiple minds sure. together working on something. And that means that these initiatives just get drawn out and get complicated. Yeah.
And whereas in a small district with Chris or I, it's typically one guy making that decision for all three of those verticals or all those two verticals, but the entire team ends up supporting it. Like my guys know how to log into wireless console and see what's going on. My guys know how to get into my firewall and look at that filter that we can get into the Chromebook. All three of us can get into the Chromebook filter. All three of us maintain Google admin together.
Right.
But I just had to talk about Infinite Campus. We had a just dealing with whatever, several thousand records that the programmer could do some mass update work to. And it was a debatable thing. There was pros and cons columns on how this would play out. We could kick it to the whole group. But again, we're small enough. I talked to two people. I feel good about what we're doing. I'm like, we're just going to pull the trigger and do the thing. Yeah. It didn't have to drag out.
Right.
I can just, there's even comparisons between Josh and I on how we handle content filter decision on what's blocked and not blocked. And Josh is like, no, I always kick that up. And I'm like, for whatever reason, I'm the kind of the guy that decides if the website's going to be blocked or not. And that's not how Josh's world works or whatever. It's cool.
I'm just a button pusher, man. So do you have any more emails, Chris? Because I got an email.
No, I will say this. Fortinet has a webinar coming up. It's called Connecting the Nation, the FCC's Vision on Broadband, Cybersecurity, and Digital Inclusion. It's on April 18th. I'll put a link to that and some better description in the podcast description. Fortinet.
And if you don't know, the FCC just changed what qualifies as their definition of broadband speeds, too. They upped it dramatically. So it's going to be interesting to see how that changes things. So I have a listener email from Bill in Walla Walla, Washington. He said they're getting ready to do their spring assessment. And he sent out an email to staff that said, hey, if you're hoarding broken Chromebooks, we need to know about that before the state assessment so that everything works fine. He gets an email from a teacher. She had 13 broken Chromebooks with broken keyboards that she was just sitting on for no apparent reason. And her kids were using the on-screen keyboard. And now he's got 13 keyboards that he needs to replace. He was rather frustrated by that and wanting to know if anybody else sees that or has that experience. We have that every spring. You're not alone, Bill. Chris, you guys experience that? You get a rush of broken Chromebooks right before spring assessment?
We do this thing. They're supposed to do it several days before the test where whatever teachers the building decides they're supposed to do these Chromebook checks.
Yeah.
That has helped a little bit over time, but we've had people not read my email and they don't do the check. So.
Yeah. I sent out an email yesterday saying, hey, this is reminder. Cause I had an upset teacher yesterday. We need to have the same testing application on our Chromebooks that the kids have on their Chromebooks. I'm like, well, that's weird. I swear I did that. I started looking and I did do that. The problem was that teacher didn't remember how to launch the testing app. So I had to send out this whole email on, hey, reminder, you don't log into the Chromebook to launch the test. It's in the app tray before you log in, yada, yada, yada. Oh, by the way, here's if you get an error message, here's how to run the self-test to see what's wrong, blah, 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 blah. So yeah, that's an every year occurrence for us. Mark, is it similar on the East Coast?
100%. Yeah, there's always going to be teachers who don't report certain things as being broken. They've got a lot of things in their mind. This is not a dig on teachers. They're very, very busy. But yes, that when you have a lot of teachers who don't report things and you get a surge of devices that are broken all at the same time, it's very, very hard.
And hey, I may or may not have had a student in shop class drill a hole into his Chromebook today.
Oh. Just
random story this year.
I guess he missed the battery.
I don't know. He did miss the battery. Yes.
The monitor or the keyboard?
The top case. Yep.
Okay. How did he get all the way through?
No. through the carrying case, and definitely the top plastic needs to get replaced. The screen looked okay.
Interesting.
But I don't know how that happens, you know. Accident. Must have tripped.
We came across a cart today that had a bunch of HP G8s in it. And so many spicy pillows. Those batteries and those HP G8s are just, as one of my technicians put it, HP made a bunch of Chromebooks unintentionally with ergonomical keyboards because they're just so swollen. And the keyboard mount, it is unbelievable, the rate of battery failures that we've had with those G8s. It's unbelievable. Unbelievable. What else we got, guys? What was our main topic tonight? I forgot.
I think that's it. We do have a visor interview.
Yeah. Chris, did you talk about Extreme?
Yeah, I did.
Okay.
That was a quick plug.
I was keeping score.
They're a proud sponsor of the K12 Tech Talk podcast, by the way. Proud. Anyway, we have the A4L summit coming up. We'll give that a quick plug, April 30th through May 2nd. We'll put a link to the podcast description on that. We will link to their website, learn all about what A4L is all about. Join them, join us for the good of the cause of that. And then we did plug at the beginning. We're going to Miami, hanging out with Coast and folks. Several people on Pro were saying they were going too. I'm excited to hopefully meet some listeners and meet some people from Pro.
Yeah. I'm going to wear a Hawaiian shirt. Do you guys call, mice or your mouse for your computer, right? What do you call multiples of those?
I know the answer to this.
My guys make fun of me because I refuse to fall into line with their thinking. What is the answer, Chris?
Technically, you should say mouses.
Yeah.
Because it's an inanimate object.
I'm not buying it.
No, you can say mice.
Mice. They yell at me. Mark, I'm going with Mark, the teacher. Mark would know. He was a teacher.
Listen, in my 30 seconds of research on Google, both are acceptable.
Oh, okay.
But mice is the right one.
Yes. Because Mark, because you taught everything.
I taught plurality of computer peripherals. That was the class I taught before
To third graders? That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. No, they ate it all up.
I'm sure.
Plurality of computer peripherals 101. And then I did a 200 level class
for
as well.
For the advanced kids.
Yeah. Yep.
Hey, here's a quick workplace story. At some place I was employed at that I had a good relationship with the maintenance director. We had a lot of fun all the time. Okay. I come into the office, sit down at my desk to work on my computer. I put my hand towards where I think is going to be the mouse, where the mouse pad would be. And I touch something. It looks like a dust, like wad, like looks like dirt, dust. And I just pick it up quickly. And he's like looking at me and cracking up laughing. And I'm like, my brain is processing what I'm holding. I'm holding a dried up dead mouse.
Oh,
like a real dried up dead mouse. He replaced my computer mouse with a dried up dead mouse that he found somewhere in the school. Okay. Time passes and I want revenge. Okay. So school has some issues at times with mice. Our office catches a mouse. It is dead. Okay. In the trap. Okay. I find it a riot to take that mouse that is not dust. It's dead as of like yesterday. And I put it on his desk in the same spot, replacing his computer mouse with dead mouse. This is a riot, right? This is a good joke.
Sure.
Oh, this is with me? Horrific, but keep going, Chris.
He comes in. He sees that his brain computes quicker than mine did previously. He fully acknowledges that it's a dead mouse on his mouse pad. And he flings it at me. It lands on my khaki pants, on like my leg, and it mouse like splatters like whatever dead juices that would be from the day. I think it's funny. He thinks it's funny. The guys in the office that aren't aware of our humor were just petrified by the whole situation. And for the rest of the day, I had mouse guts on my khaki pants.
Yeah. You know, when we had the conversation earlier in the episode about small district versus large district, something that doesn't happen in large districts is we don't throw dead carcasses at each other.
You know,
oh, come on, Mark, you know, you had dead geese.
Yeah. And when my wife landed in Boston at the airport, as soon as she stepped out the plane into the airport, there was a huge rat that ran across.
Yeah. And did she pick it up and throw it at the gate attendant? No. We let the rats run back to their home, whereas you guys in Missouri throw them at each other.
We eat them, Mark, in Missouri.
Roadkill.
All right, Chris. Let's go to the
feel bad for everybody who's like, I can't wait to meet these guys at Cosin.
I'm gonna bring a dead rat.
I'm bringing a dead mouse. I'm gonna throw it at Chris and see if we can get it in those khakis.
I wonder if they have rats in Miami. I'm gonna find one.
I still have those pants. You can still see the stain.
Oh God,
that's a joke. Anyways, right. Coming up, this is our interview with Chris from Blackford County Schools talking about Visor. Hope you enjoy it. All right, so I'm hanging out with Chris from Blackford County Schools. Chris, how's it going?
Going well.
So you use Visor, and we talk about Visor on the podcast. Dean over at Visor roped you into hanging out with me for a few minutes. Would you talk about yourself a little bit, your department, and really your school district? Where are you at?
Yeah, we're a small rural school. We have a student population of about 1,500 students. We have about 200 employees. We are a tech department of three or four. So I'm the tech coordinator. We have a tech coach, and we have two technicians that kind of help us manage our fleet. We're one-to-one Chromebooks, and we use Visor to manage that fleet.
Okay, cool. So I'm south of St. Louis. I'm 2,000 kids, 200 staff, about three tech department members. So I think we're very similar in probably what we're going through. So would you talk about, so you're using Visor to track your devices. Before we even get into Visor, what did you do before Visor for tracking your devices?
Well, we went one-to-one when COVID hit, and I've come into the tech coordinator role here towards the end of last year and into this year. And a lot of our processes were still for a tech environment that didn't support one-to-one. So when we went one-to-one, we gave every kid a device, but our processes didn't really change. And so we were still using just good old-fashioned Google Admin Console, spreadsheets, kind of came in and I kind of did an audit of our stuff. In terms of being able to track stuff down, both the device, the charger, we were just hemorrhaging cash in terms of, handing out chargers like they're Skittles, and so we needed a solution. We needed something better than what we had that was going to be way more efficient. Our ticketing system has a user interface straight out of 1998. And so I think it was a step above the old AS400. And so so I was looking for an all-in-one solution, something that could help us track our inventory, kind of control and regulate our devices on the fly, and give me a lot of flexibility in terms of how I can customize the system.
Okay.
And then upgrading our ticketing system.
Okay. So I guess then let's talk about Visor. And I know you're going to talk about how you do it. I know that Visor can kind of be customized to different processes and procedures and how you want to check in, check out Chromebooks or devices and manage them. But how does Visor help you track your students and like who has what devices?
It's really easy. It syncs up with the Google Admin Console for the users. And it's really as simple as, at deployment, we just scan the barcode. and then we assign the device to the student. And so the way we do it is the device is going to follow the student while they're in each respective building.
Okay.
And so, so the check-in, check-out process has made it really, really simple and efficient. When we're doing distribution, it's just one additional step, and it pays so many dividends as the year goes along and you run into issues.
How do you handle, we call them loaners. How do you handle when a student needs a spare Chromebook for the day? Do you use Visor for that?
We do. In Visor, you can tag the device as borrowable.
Okay.
And so it's just a little checkbox on the device the device profile, basically. You just mark it as borrowable or not. And then the way we do it here is streamlining each building. We have a designated Chromebook manager in each building. And so the Chromebook manager distributes all the loaner devices, and it's just a simple check-in, check-out. Most of our Chromebook managers are librarians, so they're very familiar with the check-in, check-out process and barcoding and stuff like that. So it just made sense for us to do it that way. And so, a kid just needs a device. They stop in the library, see the Chromebook manager. Chromebook manager goes and grabs one off the cart, scans it out to the kid, and then they just pull up the device record at the end of the day, see who has a loaner, and then they just send their runners to go pick them up.
Got it. You talked about ticketing. So are you using Visor as like a help desk?
Yeah. And we do it for Chromebooks only. We still use that old system for our Windows PC side of things. That's going to be changing because those things, we're getting rid of those. And every teacher is going to be on a Chromebook within 2 years. And so we're going to rely on Visor as our main technology ticketing system. We really don't have that many tickets other than Chromebooks, to be honest. And so my techs actually prefer having the two separate systems because most of their day is consumed with wrenching on Chromebooks. And so they like having the Visor system that gives them a lot of reporting flexibility and assigning the device and changing its status from repair. They really like the dashboards. So they can see exactly how many devices that they have out for repair, they pull it up in the morning, see how many have I got a wrench on today? We're probably going to transition everything over to Visor for ticketing, but right now we just have the Chromebooks.
Okay. And I know it does some stuff. Talk about that reporting, because you can look at serial number stuff and specs all within Visor. Is that right?
Yeah. It gives you a full device profile. It lets you know the users, the primary user, like who was assigned the device. It gives you all the recent users, MAC address, IP address. It gives you all that stuff. It allows us to identify pretty easily lemon devices or our repeat offenders, kids who are awfully tough on Chromebooks. And so it gives us a lot of data to be able to put in. I guess I'm a former teacher, so targeted interventions, I guess, on the tech side of things. It gives us the ability to look, this is your third repair in a month. This is the third time you've come and seen us in a month. We can go talk to that kid and find out what's exactly is going on. And sometimes it's as simple as, take care of your stuff. But maybe sometimes there might be some extenuating search. But anyway, we never had that before. With the system that we'd used.
A lot of schools that do I think you hear a lot of schools doing we're going to use a Google spreadsheet or we're going to use an Excel spreadsheet, and you can get data. Of course you can get data, but you're doing some sorting and some looking. Maybe you're running some formulas if you're trying to be hardcore about it. But when I've seen Visor's reports, it's really easy.
Yeah, it's really, really simplistic. I actually asked them to do a custom, create me a custom field, and I actually just had them change a field that we weren't using so that at distribution we can assign the device to the kid, but then we can tag the kid's homeroom teacher. And through its filtering, it makes it really, really easy for me to create class inventories, list inventories. Yep. So I can just get the kids, get the devices off of that, filter it out by the homeroom teacher, and it gives me the inventories of that individual class. That's how we do, you know, homeroom is kind of our, I call it our housekeeping period.
Yep.
So that's where we push all of our distribution, collection, and then the housekeeping stuff out. So,
yeah.
But that's been a customization. One of the custom things I've asked them to do that is, oh my goodness, it saves so much time.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, even above spreadsheet, I think you get the schools that use like their current library card catalog system for check-in, check-out. But what you're quickly saying, this is better than those. And it's aimed for the tech department.
Yes.
Those other things are rigged up solutions for sure.
Yeah. And the good thing about it is, you know, our Chromebook managers, who are primarily the ones who do the check-in, check-out stuff, like the learning curve for that was, you know, next to nothing. I mean, they picked it up just like that. And, you know, and they're not, you know, they're good at what they do, but they're not, you know, tech system experts by any means, you know. So it's the learning curve for it's been pretty easy. The way it integrates single sign-on with Google, you know, makes it really, really simple for managing our users.
Is there any, you talk about single sign-on, is there any other feature that sticks out to you that you like using or that you use often that you think you might want to share?
Just the repairs queue, the way they separate the repairs queue, I can run in there. Use that a lot. When I get in here, I use the contracts, agreements, and purchases to track all my tech purchases. And that really, really helps me with budgeting to kind of see, you know, how many screens have we repaired? How many did we pull out of inventory? It gives us the number of parts that we have in inventory. If you wanted to input that stuff as you get it, you can tag it directly to a PO. So if you need to update your pricing sheets, it's really, really simple to see, like, all right, so I pulled this screen off the shelf. We paid $32 up. The price has gone up, and that's what we bill. You know,
that's awesome.
That's pretty slick. Kind of along those same lines, it gives me an alert when I have maybe a subscription that's about to expire.
Okay.
You know, it'll send us a note, and we can customize how soon we want that notification or not. Awesome. And then along with that, when you do that purchase, you can tag the devices. You can do a mass update of devices, and you can tag, you know, exactly all the warranty information. So you can see whether or not that device is still under warranty or not, when it expires, what level of warranty service you have. So, you know, the system is as good as the data that you put into it.
Yeah.
You know, and you get automatically, I mean, the data you get just by default for what it's able to pull from, you know, the admin console and the way it's able to organize it in a very clean and efficient interface, you know, right out of the box, it's a phenomenal product.
Yeah. Awesome. Awesome. All right, you mentioned customization. Would you speak to the visor teams? Like, how is support? How was implementation? Would you speak to that?
Yeah, support is amazing. The tech that we work with, he's always Johnny on the spot. You know, if it's as simple as sending him an email, hey, I'd like to be able to do this. And usually what I do is I just send him a screenshot and I just annotate it up. Like, I would like for this to be this, or I want this to be, I don't need this. Or I'd like to be able to do this. Can we do this? And everything I've asked him to do, for exactly the way that we want to run our processes, they've been able to accommodate it.
Right.
So, you know, I gave the example earlier of, you know, I wanted, to be able to tag the teacher, you know, to each device. There was a field that I wanted changed. I think it was a service tag field. We won't use that. So I had them change that to Charger, and that's where we put the we put the Charger serial number right with the device and the kid. And then all of that's filterable. So if I happen to be walking the hallways and I just pick up a Charger and I see it, I can come back and just scan the serial number of that Charger, and it'll take me right to the device and the user who owns that Charger.
Awesome. All right. This was a question that Dean made up. We're going to see what you do with this. This is the last question.
All right.
One word that you would use to describe Visor and why?
Oh, man.
I was going to say good.
I was going to say like ibuprofen, like it's eliminated a lot of headaches.
Hey, that's a good one.
Yeah, I was going to say relief, efficient, organized, you know, pick one. I don't care. Which.
Yeah, yeah, awesome. All right, well, Chris from Blackford County Schools in Indiana, thanks for hanging out with us. And you can check out Visor, V-I-Z-O-R. Chris, I think you cleared up any we always talk about, we misspeak on the podcast all the time about these sponsors that we have. So every once in a while, they'll throw an interview our way to clear the air, to make sure that we're steering the ship right. So I think you did that today. So thanks for hanging out with me.
All right, I appreciate it.
The views and opinions expressed on the K-12 Tech Talk podcast are the personal opinions of Josh, Chris, and Mark, and do not represent the views or opinions of our sponsors or other organizations that we're affiliated with. The material information presented here is for general information and entertainment purposes only. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.